Lectionary Lab Live is recorded by Two Bubbas and a Bible. We're glad that you're tuning in. Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my Bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, Bubba.
Hey, Bubba.
Man, good to get up with you today. We're going to talk a little text for the 24th Sunday after Pentecost. These are the texts for October the 30th, 2016. We're glad to be back on the air. Last week, you know, we posted on the website. Life just happened. We're busy enough as working pastors, aren't we, Bubba? But seem like we've had a spate of family medical situations these last few weeks. And I know I was running hither and yon, getting to doctor's appointments and helping my mama and my daughter-in-law and my brother-in-law. And you've got a wife that having some medical stuff. And anyhow, we just got busy, couldn't get around to it last week. And glad to get back into it this week. I know.
I was reminded of one of my mentors. When I first started, he said, if you want to work 10 hours a day in ministry, plan six. The other four will show up. And so the other four were showing up, and then family.
As I'm going to say, busy time of the year, and I throw a little family stuff in there. So
it just happened.
Always our commitment that as much we can, we'll be on the air and we'll be talking text. And we appreciate everybody's patience and participation. I was just about to say, we've got a great text today. I love this gospel text with Zacchaeus and the other texts that support. I know for you, we've chatted about this over time. This time of year for Lutherans, this text often falls here very near October 31st, which brings Reformation for you all, and you most often have a sermon kind of like that. How often have you preached this Zacchaeus text?
Sometime, but not lately. I was looking through my deep file, and I didn't find much of anything. You know, and I just want to say to any Lutherans that are looking for some help with Reformation Sunday, usually what happens, particularly in the last 20 or 30 years, is instead of having a separate Reformation Day service, most churches observe the last Sunday in October's Reformation Sunday. And this is proper 26, which falls between this such date. So it almost never, as a Lutheran, you almost never preach on this with the new lectionary. So if you're looking for one, you can go to Living Lutheran and go to Spiritual Resources. And there's a sermon by Delmer Chilton. Nice fella on Reformation Sunday text.
Yeah.
So find that. That's a resource for you. Otherwise, we're going to talk about Zacchaeus.
Let me just, and I've got a note on our lectionarylab.com website about using the search feature, which is on the left-hand panel there on our website. You can type in Reformation or Reformation Sunday, and I know you can pull up at least two or three things that you've posted before, and it's a good resource. So
that's
always encourage you guys to use that. I just encourage everybody to use that because we are not continuing to update commentary, et cetera, but there's nearly 5 years' worth of commentary and sermons that are still available on lectionarylab.com. Just use the search function for any of the scriptures for any of the Sundays. You can type in, a day, a festival day or whatever. And if it's on there, it'll pull it up. So y'all feel free to use that. That's why
it's a great search engine. Every once in a while, I say, have I told this story before? And I might put a major word in the search and say, oh, yeah, I did.
I did. There it was.
There it is. Yeah.
I hear you. Good. Well, lead us into considerations for preaching this week. The Zacchaeus story, kind of the central core, I suppose, with these other texts. What are you thinking about this week, Bubba?
Well, I tell you what, the last verse of the last lesson, I think, sets our theme for the day. 19:10, for the Son of Man came to seek out and save the lost.
Right.
That kind of categorizes the particularly for the gospel lesson, the Hebrew scripture, and the psalm, which are all tied together, and somewhat Second Thessalonians, and I'll get to that. But, you know, the themes have to do with sin and forgiveness, guilt and forgiveness, et cetera, and Zacchaeus, and what does it mean to be saved, and those sorts of things, of seek and save the lost. This is our overall themes today. So I'm going to start with Luke and work my way backwards, if that's okay.
That'll work for me.
He does with the Luke text, 19:1-10. It's one of those Luke stories that he uses, I think, a kind of great storyteller technique. He's always been a good storyteller. And a lot of the other Gospels, you get a lot of the great stories are told by Jesus. The rest of it's kind of like then this right. happened, you know. Mm-hmm. But Luke's got a real storyteller's art, and he tells us the story in a really fine way, and he sets things up really well. And you've got this story about Zacchaeus coming along, and then first of all, he sets it up just by saying he entered Jericho, and that hints and was passing through. He wasn't going to stay, but it hints to you there could be crowds, there could be people. It's late in Luke, mm-hmm. so he's gotten known. And so then he introduces the other character. Right away, you've got two characters, Jesus walking through and Zacchaeus. And he sets it up very sparsely but adequately. Chief tax collector.
Oh, yeah.
Big sinner. And we've already had a lot of stuff up through 19 about tax collectors.
That's it. They've appeared on a regular basis, and we've noted. And last week, we had the great reversal, the Pharisee right. versus the tax collector, and which one went home righteous. Yeah, yeah.
So he pops it up with chief, and then we've had other things about rich people, various rich people, and he doubles down, and he was rich. And people are, you know, the crowd, you got to think of the crowd listening, say, ooh, a rich tax collector, he got rich with all his evil, ill-gotten gains
yeah.
and job in the system. Ooh, what an awful person. And then you got... He was trying to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not because he was short in stature. Here is an aside, but not really. Who was short? Zacchaeus or Jesus? When I first noticed that, I said, well, maybe that's just the way the English is translated. The Greek is translated into English, but you look back and the Greek allows that too. Mm. And the early, do you do more research? The early church said, well, they use this text to talk about how Jesus, as the Son of Man, wasn't who everybody thought he was. It's another part of that, the odd Messiah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like the text from Isaiah, who was he that you looked upon him? He had small, bad form. He didn't look nice. He was all that sort of thing. And so this is an identity. So anyway, it's an interesting thing to play with. I mean, we've all learned the song,
Wee little man was he.
And mm-hmm. either way, the story works. But I think it adds a flavor to it that he climbed the tree because Jesus was short. And Jesus was not who everybody expected. And he didn't know who it was. This is the funny thing. I remember as a kid, and you'd sing that song, and you'd have these sermons. And my impression was Zacchaeus had come to see Jesus, mm-hmm. and he couldn't get to him. So he climbed a tree like, hey, look at me. That's not what the story says.
Not at all.
He walked out of his office and he said, there's a crowd. Who's that coming? Well, I can't tell. Where is he? I can't see him. Well, let me climb this tree, see if I can see who the heck this is. Mm-hmm. He was trying to see who Jesus was.
Which is the point. Yeah.
Point.
I think that's a great idea. You could, how fascinating. You know, you could completely turn this story around in its details of what we right. normally sort of thought, and it doesn't change the story. He's trying to see who is this Jesus. He is trying to see Jesus. Yeah.
And for us, you know, the people, us today, who Jesus is crowded up. With all kinds of impressions and all kinds of things, or the people around Jesus can keep us from seeing Jesus. Depends on who they are. I know people who talk about, you know, it's hard for them to believe in Jesus because of whatever political positions, people who are very loud about their Christianity mm-hmm. and their political positions. And you're saying, that's not the Jesus I'm talking about,
yeah.
you know? And so he's trying to see who Jesus was. That's a great point of we're seekers trying to see who Jesus is. And he gets up in the tree and he's looking, and because he knew Jesus was going to pass that way. Now here's the miraculous moment that works either way. Jesus got to that place, and yeah, he saw the man in the tree. That's not hard. So he stops, but he knew him. Calls him by name.
Yeah.
Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. I love Luke's way of telling that. It's kind of like Zacchaeus is wondering who Jesus is, but Jesus already knows who Zacchaeus is. Sermon point.
That's what we're talking
about. You know, we're seeking Jesus and wondering who he is, and Jesus already knows who you are.
Yeah.
And Jesus wants to be with you. He wants to come to your house, wants to be a part of your life. No matter, and Zacchaeus knew who he was, who he himself was. A chief tax collector, there's no way you don't know if you're a tax collector in this time and place that you're a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know,
nobody had invited him to the party. He had to come find it on his own,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you get in 6. He was happy to welcome him. Happy there is a, you know, astounded almost. Just elated. He was, wow. Not just, oh, okay, it's fine. Come on in. It's like,
yeah. Nobody ever wants to come to my house.
Nobody wants to come to my house, particularly not somebody everybody else loves. He is
cool
graced.
Is this? Yeah.
How cool is this? He is at this grace moment. Now, and then, you know, verse 7. Luke sets up the wonderful grumbling, the conflict story, and it's very subtle. It's one line. You know, he doesn't have a big deal, but we've been set up for this with all the, he eats with tax collectors and sinners. He eats with tax collectors and sinners. He eats with tax collectors. You know, who's he eating with? Why is he inviting this person? Why is he touching her? All of that up to here, very simple. He's gone to be a guest of one who is a sinner. What? There should be a question mark, exclamation point. What is that? They call them emoticons. I'm not very good.
Yeah, we need an emoticon here.
We need an emoticon of a
shock sneer. Face. Yeah.
Shock and sneer.
Yeah.
Sneer. So, and Zacchaeus, now some people have interpreted 19:8 and the way it follows when Jesus says, then your salvation has come, as saying Zacchaeus did these things, then Jesus said you're saved. He had to do something to get saved. I'm going to be extremely Lutheran, I think, extremely gospel. No, Zacchaeus is responding to the grace.
Mm-hmm.
He's already been saved. Jesus says, I'll come. I'm going to be there. I'm accepting you. And he responds out of the fullness of the heart. Look, nobody told him he had to do anything. He says, half my possession. I'm going to give those to the poor. Remember the rich young man? He said, mm-hmm. Give your possessions to the poor. And he went away sad because he had so much.
Yep.
Zacchaeus volunteers. And if, notice he says if, I think, you know, he'll have to have a deeper conversation with Jesus about that if. If I have defrauded anyone of anything. I think that if should probably be translated.
And I know I have, yeah.
And I know I have defrauded anyone of anything. I will pay back 4 times as much. So it's not like, it's more of an if of, and you did the Greek, the way they say it, if, and I know that I have, it's more along the lines, if you're one of the ones I've defrauded, I will give you 4 times back what I defrauded.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And Jesus pronounces the salvation, which is the rescue. Salvation is rescue. It's
preservation. It's preservation. Yeah.
It's taking, you know, safety. Mm-hmm. And his soul was at peril. He was lost, far from his. To be lost is to be far from where you belong.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it means. Far from where you know where you are and far from where you belong. And he was far from God.
Yeah.
And he was far from his people.
Yeah.
And he had separated himself. And that's what the Son of Man coming to seek out. He doesn't come and sit and say, here I am, come to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's... There are so many, to me, fascinating considerations here. And I'll say right off the top, there's no way to pack them all into a sermon.
No.
But I think as pastors and preachers, we have to continually be thinking of these things. In last week's story, we had the Pharisee and the tax collector and one who went home justified. I talked about which one had room in their life for God. One was so full of himself, there was no room for God. Another was willing to completely empty himself. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And so here we have Zacchaeus with evidently a great capacity for letting go of those things which might hold him back from God and making room. I think it's interesting that salvation, in Jesus' words in verse 9, have to do with this man being a son of Abraham.
Yeah.
Okay, now that's not going to be real popular with maybe sort of a traditional evangelical kind of a mindset, but I think this is the good news. This is the same good news God has been giving and bringing for a very long time. Takes us back to that covenant promise with Abraham.
Right.
This is God showing up to do something, and this is God redeeming a world. And the final thing I'll put out is our key thought here in verse 10. If it's about a Savior who has come to seek and save the lost, upon whom does that imperative rest? On those who are lost or on the one who seeks?
Yeah.
And so this whole question of when is a person saved, when does salvation come to this house, I just think it's fascinating to evaluate it in terms of this is the very, very long working of God, and this is Jesus' stated purpose. The Son of Man has come to seek and save the lost. That's what he will do.
Well, two things about that, about the lost. One is, that's what I meant about being lost and being restored to his people. He is a son of Abraham.
Right.
And he needs to know who he is. Knowing who you are and whose you are, to me, is the definition of being saved. Mm-hmm. And for him, that covenant sacrament. The other thing is, you were talking about who's the actor. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an old joke, pastor joke about the two kids that were kind of teenage boys, or not quite teenagers, tweens. Isn't that what they call?
Yeah, tweeners.
Tweeners, and they were kind of twins, and they were out rambunctious and mean, and their mama brought them to see the preacher.
Right.
And so he's sitting there talking to them, and all of a sudden they come running out and said, "I didn't do it, I didn't do it." And mama gets hold of them and said, "What?" He said, he wanted to know if we had found Jesus, and we said, "We didn't have nothing to do with it."
We didn't lose him.
We didn't lose him. We ain't had nothing to do with it. So, who's moved? They didn't lose him. They didn't do it. Would people say, who found Jesus?
Right.
Have you found Jesus? The answer is.
Yeah. Well, I think.
Whether he's found us.
And that's it. And I think we struggle sometimes with this language of salvation. And I hit upon this last week with the tax collector, and I'm going to bring it over to Zacchaeus this week. At the end of the story, we see a man who has found his place with God and found his peace with God.
Yep.
And I'm sort of working with that right now for this whole idea of what it means to be saved. When someone has found their place with God and found their peace with God. And Jesus is seeking those who need to be in that state. And so it's a bigger, broader, wider, more wonderful salvation than we most of the time imagine.
We limit it to the have you found Jesus? Mm-hmm. have you been saved sometimes?
Right.
And it's a bigger, broader, wider experience.
Yep.
Touching base with the Hebrew scriptures. You've got the Isaiah, and this is a standard prophet set piece. We're most familiar with it as it's done in Micah 6:6-8.
Right.
It's the kind of all that religious ceremony don't mean nothing unless you clean up your life, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Now, one of the things some people have used this for is to dismiss any kind of religious ceremony, call it empty ritualism. That's not what it says.
No.
It's not what the prophet's saying. It's saying if you're doing it externally without anything in your heart going on, then you're wasting your time. if you go into confession, you're going through it, the motions, and you're not really genuinely repentant. And this is the lines about of bringing offerings is futile, et cetera, unless, you know, I cannot endure solemn assemblies with iniquity. Mm-hmm. If the solemn assemblies has iniquity, they're not acknowledging. So first of all, you've got the accusation. I like the beginning where it says, hear the word, listen. It's like, hear ye, hear ye. Mm-hmm. The judge is coming. It's like, here's the court. Here's the judge. Then the judge speaks through down through 11 through 15. And it's an accusation, empty ritual, doesn't matter. Don't do any good. It's a matter of, it's got to be the heart. 16 and 17 talks about what you do. And it talks about ritual, washing yourself, make yourself clean, removing the evil. That's stage one, you know, do the emotional piece. Mm-hmm. And then stage two, learn to do good, seek justice, rescue the oppressed, defend. Those are actions.
Yeah.
In result of having confessed and been forgiven, you go forth and serve. Great sermon. And I love the way the NRSV translate what we've all come to know as, come, let us reason together. That's mm-hmm. so nice. Come now, let us argue it out.
Argue it out. It is vigorous. Yep.
And that ties back to the court system, because mm-hmm. what do lawyers do? They argue a case. Yep. They argue the case. And then it has that lovely language we all know about sins being scarlet and being like snow and red like crimson. They will come like wool, white wool, and it's about forgiveness. So, once again, this is one of my hobby horses. Yeah, there's a lot of mercy and grace in the Hebrew scriptures.
Well, and again, that's why I think that's a great opportunity to tie it to the gospel when Jesus says the son of Abraham. This gospel, this deliverance and salvation that God brings has been going on a very long time before Jesus set foot on the earth. And Jesus, I believe, is fully aware of that. And so, yeah, we see it right here in the prophet.
Well, Psalm 32, 1 through 7, again, you've got sin and forgiveness. And I was just going to suggest that, you know, those of us, many of us have set forms for confession and forgiveness. Mm-hmm. But if you wanted to vary that and have the freedom to do that, this would be great, is to do a confessional kind of responsory using the psalm rather than reading the psalm the way we normally do by verse, whole verses or half verses. Mm-hmm. Have the leader or the pastor do 32, 1 and 2, mm-hmm. an invitation, happy are those, et cetera, et cetera. Then you get verses 3 through 5 in which you talk about what guilt and remorse feels like. And then I acknowledge my sin. I didn't hide my iniquity. And then you have verses 6 and 7, then the pronunciation of the forgiveness and what the result of having forgiven. So you've got invitation to confess, confession, and words of assurance. And it makes it kind of a nice little liturgical piece. Mm-hmm. But it has all within it. It is that middle part, to me, is the strongest part of this, is the weight of guilt and remorse.
Absolutely.
And if you can read that without feeling the tug, then you just have not acknowledged your own sorriness.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of us have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And if you hadn't gotten in touch with what that feels like, this will do it for you.
Yeah. Another way of using this in a similar type of way, turning this into sort of a call and answer, call and response, the refrain. Verse 5 makes an excellent makes an excellent congregational refrain. I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and God will forgive the guilt of my sin.
Yep.
And so you read a verse or two and have the response, and then another verse or two and have the response. It works out great.
Great, mm-hmm. great. And it's a great way to work that. And for churches that don't normally do
yes.
mm-hmm. a confessional thing, that's a great way to do that.
You know? That'd work in you. That work in down at the Baptist church.
It might. I'll leave you to judge that.
That's how we're using it. So yeah.
I wonder. I thought that sounded a little bit pre-thought out. So Second Thessalonians text is different, except I want to mention the omission part quick. Mm-hmm. The New Revised Lectionary folks left out the second coming and the rapture and the vengeful God, which, you know,
all the good stuff.
Theological choice there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so in the midst of that, there is this sense that you might want to touch in that verses 5 through 10, and particularly verse 8. In that, if you go look at it about, you know, those who don't believe, those who are sinful, they're going to get punished, you know, kind of the weight of sin that, from which we are rescued. What the text that we have before us is just, so, you know, we got 3 weeks of 2 Thessalonians.
Right.
And as a traditional greeting, and then it's a praise to the congregation because of their faith and love in the face of persecution. And this is where then it goes in this 5 through 10 that gets left out about what God's going to do at the second coming. It's kind of like, you know, the Calvary's coming. Hold on. Hold on. I know you're being attacked. Calvary's coming any minute. The Marines will be here.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of, it's more of that kind of emotional truth, I think, than it is any kind of, you should hang anything on that God's going to come with sword in hand and cutting people's heads off. And that's a different kind of thing. It's like, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, so y'all keep your swords tucked away.
Yeah.
You know, just hang on.
Yeah.
And then you come to 11 and 12. So the last part we have of this verse that talks about, hold on, so that to this end, I always like that transition, to this end, we pray for you, what end? That you will hold on.
Yeah.
Asking the Lord will make you worthy of his call and fulfill by his power every good resolve and work of faith. Interesting in that is it's God who does it and not us. You hold on, keep faith, and God will fill you, will make you worthy.
Right.
God will fulfill by his power every good resolve and work of faith. I think that's called sanctification at some level, that God makes us holy, gives us power.
Well, very, and just interesting that, again, in the gospel we saw, it's Jesus who comes to seek and save, the actor, and it's God who sanctifies.
Yep.
It is God at work in us, and it is the, you know, the Spirit at work in us. So
the theological final moment is that God acts to save, and our act is to respond to that salvation.
Yeah.
With love and grace, not just to God.
Right.
But to others all the way through. You know, Isaiah's got do good, seek justice, rescue the oppressed, defend the orphan, plead for the widow. In the psalm, it's talking about, you know, the things that we do. We go that God
we offer faithful prayer.
We do things. Thessalonians, again, good works and all this. And then you got Zacchaeus giving away money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just that how Jesus makes me feel good and makes me prosper. It's I respond to God's grace by being graceful and generous in the world.
Yep. And in result, Paul, in that passage, the Lord Jesus may be glorified in you.
Yep.
Well, that's why we're here. That's why we're here. Bubba, that's good stuff to walk around
in. Yeah, it was fun.
I know you may be preaching Reformation, and I will confess, I actually will not be preaching this week. I'm going to be taking a little time away with my mi esposo, and we're going to enjoy it. I probably will sneak into somebody's service somewhere.
That's what them senior pastors with two other ordained people on staff, get to do every now and again.
Well, that's right. That's right. Although I'm inviting a local church planter to come and share this week, and he's going to do a great job.
So, there you go. Good deal.
Well, that's good, man. We'll aim to be back next week, do a little bit more. In the meantime, our best thoughts, prayers, and wishes to all of you who will be proclaiming in your variety of places and settings. God bless y'all real good, as Jerry Clower used to say. Bubba, not much left for us to do other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Crawdad Stomp by Joshua Kirsch. We go out this session with Book of Days, the theme from the movie Far and Away, composed and performed by Enya.